Hi, everybody. It is Wednesday night, July the 29th. It is 9 p.m.-ish. You are listening to WVEW LP 107.7 FM, Brattleboro Community Radio. And you're listening to This Show Is So Gay. My name is Ken.
And I'm Becca.
don't think about cleaning the station right now.
We're having a really hard time. I just spent the last hour or so cleaning the studio because little piggies left it a mess again.
Be in the gay moment.
But I have like this OCD thing, which once I start, I can't stop. Okay. So if you hear scrubbing over the air, that would be me.
That is Becca. We are starting out on an unbelievably depressing note.
Oh, God.
Sorry. Just yesterday, Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger. And just how funny is it to say that?
Oh, God.
Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger.
It's not funny at all in this story.
No. He struck a devastating blow to HIV and AIDS service groups by slashing funding for prevention and care management programs. The governor's office cited that it would be around $52 million in cuts to HIV program, but the California Department of Public Health, their Office of AIDS, estimated that the total figure will likely climb as high as $85 million. So from Michelle Rowland, the chief of the Office of AIDS, she said, quote, there are no general funds remaining for care and support this year. I'm like, I can barely get through this. It is also unclear how the state will allocate remaining funds to local service and medical programs. Mark Cloutier, and I always screw up his name, but I've met him, and he's an amazing guy who is the CEO of the San Francisco AIDS Foundation, said in a quote, quote, in a time of great economic hardship, California is balancing its budget by eliminating services to its most vulnerable citizens. By wiping out all state funding for HIV prevention and testing, we risk a serious setback in the hard-won progress we've made against the AIDS epidemic in California. Ridiculous. So as we talked about, I guess around a month ago, Andrew and I had gone out to California and we did the San Francisco to LA AIDS ride, and the big deal during that ride was whether or not funding was going to be cut. But people had said, oh, during the ride, it looked likely that funding was going to be cut. But afterwards, they said, no, it's not going to be cut. And I guess that wasn't correct. And indeed, around $85 million is going to be cut. So that's terrible.
There's so many people working so hard to prevent that, too.
Yeah. So, exactly. So there are folks that are trying to overturn this, but it's not looking great. So I immediately had this reaction, and whether or not it was rational, it's done now. So as we said last week, and I think the week before that, we're hosting an amazing event called Notes for Life, and it's on October 10th, 2009, and it's here in Brattleboro, Vermont. And the funds are being 100% of the proceeds are being split between the AIDS Project of Southern Vermont and the San Francisco AIDS Foundation. So this is pretty topical at this point. And tickets weren't going to go on sale for about 2 weeks. And then I saw this story and I changed the date, and now tickets are on sale immediately. And it was kind of a very gut reaction, and we haven't really started promoting the event. But it was so important to me that just in that moment I had to do something and say, all right, well, we got to start raising money and we got to start doing something. So stroll on over to notesforlife.net. And if you can't make it to the event, but you still want to buy a ticket, you can buy a couple tickets and make a note and say, I won't be going to the event. And then some people who can't afford to go to the event but really want to be supportive will be able to go to the event. So if you're listening to us from all across the country and you're thinking, oh, gosh, I'm not going to Vermont. I don't go to Vermont. You still can buy a ticket and support, or just really go to any number.
You can sponsor a ticket.
So, or just go to any number of organizations in California. We won't list them all. And you can be supportive in that way. So really depressing. I'm really bummed out. And in some ways it's interesting that I feel very connected to California, because I think that even a year ago I would have looked at a story like that and said, oh, that sucks. But this really, it's a terrible thing. So be supportive in whatever way you know to be supportive, even if it's volunteering a couple hours at your local HIV AIDS shelter, whatever it may be, because I guarantee wherever you are, the funding's probably not a lot better.
Right, and there is need.
There is a huge, almost
guaranteed need. Wherever you are, there is need.
Yeah. So that's us starting on a depressing note, but hopefully we'll inspire folks to go out there and do something. Please know that this is what's going on in California. Send some folks a supportive email, because they can certainly use it. We have an amazing show for you tonight. Ariel Levy, who is a staff writer for The New Yorker, is going to be on the show a little bit later on tonight. And I'm thrilled to have her. And she has some fantastic song requests. So we are going to start out and play some of her songs. Y'all
Excellent.
Ready? Here we go.
Fashion magazines. Oh, what a world it seems where you live in, straight man. Oh, what a world we live in. Why am I always on a plane or a fast train? Oh, what a world my parents gave me.
Rufus Wainwright mumbling something, a song called Oh What a World. Singing.
What was the problem?
Not mumbling. He was singing. So let's just keep going with the depressing news. I think it's really going to pick people up and take them out of their doldrums. Now, over in Huntington, Oregon. Have you
yes.
been to Oregon?
No, actually.
Oh, I find that you usually have been to all these states.
I've been to most of the states, okay. That's why.
So,
I just haven't gotten that far.
A lesbian couple. You've met lesbian couples.
I have.
Okay. A lesbian couple in Huntington, Oregon. They were refused a couple's discount when entering a catfish derby.
Wait. Can you start over?
A lesbian couple in Huntington, Oregon were refused a couple's discount when entering a catfish derby. I'm telling you, I got the story. I still am not exactly clear what a catfish derby is. But
are they like racing catfish?
I don't think so. I'm assuming it's some sort of catching
like
contest.
Grasshopper jockeys or something on the catfish. No.
Now I have that imagery. Angela and Tina Corriere Gooch, that's hyphenated, were registering for the event when they saw there was a discount for couples. However, they were refused the discount, and a representative then explained, quote, none of this boy-boy, girl-girl couples crap. The $1 discount, that's what they were trying to get, was given to other couples, including their nieces, who entered the contest with their boyfriends. One of them, Tina, said, quote, it's insulting and degrading that the club treated us like strangers instead of recognizing our committed relationship. And Mike Rainey, the chairman of the event, says he didn't refuse the discount out of discrimination. He said he figured if he offered the discount, he would have to extend the offer to all same-sex pairs, regardless of their sexual orientation. And in my favorite quote from Mike Rainey, the chairman of the event, quote, I wasn't making a statement against lesbians. I was just trying to run a catfish derby. I can sympathize with that. In the many times that I've tried to run a catfish derby, I found that tons of women show up and say, oh, I'm a lesbian couple.
Yeah, you've got that those like 15-year-olds yes. trying to get the children's discount.
And they're like, oh,
you've
got
the 40-year-olds yeah. trying to get the senior
citizen. I want to get into your catfish derby. And if folks don't know, and I'm sure I talk about it pretty much every week, when I'm not here and I'm not at work, you can usually find me at a catfish derby. If you know what a catfish derby is, if you could send us an email at this show is so gay.
And if grasshoppers are in any way involved, I want to know.
Becca would like to know. This show is so gay at AOL.com. If you've been to a catfish derby and you can provide photographic proof that you've been to a catfish derby, we will send you a magnet. So send us an email over at this show is so gay at AOL.com. You will get a magnet if you include a picture of you
at a catfish derby.
At a catfish derby. You do not have to be part of a lesbian couple to win the magnet.
And you'll get something way cooler if you are at a catfish derby
you
wearing
right
or holding a This Show Is So Gay t-shirt or a sign that you made
you,
with glitter glue specifically because I have
If you in some way are sporting This Show Is So Gay paraphernalia at a catfish derby, you win the show. We will.
No, you can take my seat at Notes for Life.
You can tell.
That's what you win. And one of our listeners is sending me a text message here saying, at least it wasn't mud bogging. Now, I have no idea what mud bogging is either. I feel like.
Listeners and their freaky activities. As long as you're listening, folks, that's the important thing. We're going
to
play some more music.
You know?
And lesbian couples, I'm sure, can get a discount at the knitting store.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they own it.
And
sure.
On that note, here we go.
Something about something about what happens when we talk. Something about what happens when we talk. Something about what happens when we talk. Something about what happens when we...
All right, that was Lucinda Williams. I think it's time to welcome a guest. How do you feel about welcoming a guest?
Yay, guest.
Guest, are you there?
Yeah.
Oh, that's always a good start. Let's introduce you. For 12 years, Ariel Levy was a writer for New York Magazine, and last year became a staff writer for The New Yorker. In 2005, she published Female Chauvinist Pigs, Women and the Rise of Raunch Culture, which is now in paperback in many different languages, so you should go pick that up. Stephen Colbert essentially called her a Muslim fundamentalist on her appearance on his show, which was a pretty brilliant segment, and I definitely want to hear about that. And just about a month ago, The Advocate named her to their list of 40 under 40. She's one of the first guests that we're having in the 40. She is the first guest that we're having in the 40 under 40. We have like 8 more coming up in the next couple weeks. So we are thrilled that you are first. And Ariel Levy.
Gosh, I'm thrilled that I'm first too.
You are first. Ariel Levy, welcome to the show. So Gay. How are you?
I'm so gay. Good. How are you?
We're doing fantastic.
Welcome.
Now, see, we talked last year to a lot of people who were on Out Magazine's Out 100, and they had these really cool photo shoots. But what you had, I think, was really, you had a depiction of you in The Advocate.
There was a drawing.
How did that make you feel? That was pretty cool.
That was very cool. Well, the whole thing was neat. I thought it was really fun to be in that. I thought that was very exciting. And a drawing is always good because then you don't have to get your picture taken.
Exactly.
And then you don't have to run the risk that they're going to run some picture where you just look hideous, which happens, and then it's a bummer.
No, this was a good drawing. This wasn't
this
like
was
a
great.
This was not like a bar mitzvah caricature.
No.
This was good.
Yes.
All right.
I agree. I was very pleased with that.
Did you get a life size of it?
No, you know, I should ask my friend Sean Kennedy who worked there. I should ask him if I can have my own copy,
you
but
should
I doubt
that.
I doubt that that's the way they roll. But I would like that.
I want it at this point. We got to,
yeah,
Becca. We got to get drawings.
Work on that.
Okay.
We got to get drawings of us done.
We should.
All right. Let's work on that. All right. We have so much to talk with you about. Are
oh
you ready?
God, we better start talking.
We got to start talking. Here we go. All right. So one of the things that I want to talk about, probably a running theme of all the different stories I want to go over with you, are gay and lesbian representation in the media. Because you know,
uh-huh,
you're good at that.
Oh, thanks.
Yes, you're good at that.
So are we.
We're okay
or
at that.
We're at least involved.
We're involved. So this week, if folks didn't see, the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation came out with their third annual Network Responsibility Index. And that's where they basically go through the different networks and they issue a percentage of how much of their programming has gay characters in it. And so cable TV came out way better than network TV. But I was reading through the stories and the commentary started coming out that a lot of the examples, if not a vast majority of the examples, even in the networks that were rated really high in representing gay and lesbian folks quite well, they were almost all examples of gay men.
I mean, surprise, surprise.
Explain it to our audience. What is that about?
I can't explain. Well, the only thing I can say, which is insufficient, is just, you know, I mean, it's like, it still is sort of male-dominated world and culture and country, so I don't know why we're surprised that in our world of gayness it would be any different. But, I mean, I just think, you know, just representations on TV, and also, you know, I live in New York City. It's like you walk around Chelsea or anywhere, and there's just, like, if you're a gay guy, no matter what you're into, sexually or athletically or just whatever it is, there's a bar where you can go, and there'll be 5 million other gay guys who are into the same thing.
At least.
And there's, like, one lesbian bar. I mean, I don't know why that is. I don't know why that is, but it's a drag.
It's a drag.
It is a drag.
Okay. Well, and there was this other story that came out this week, and this just floored me, and would love to get your take on this. The WNBA's, I don't know if folks saw this, the WNBA's The Mystics, which apparently is a team in the WNBA, a lot of the other sports that are held at the same stadium and in the area have a kiss cam. So that's
okay.
This camera that catches people kissing on camera. But apparently, because the WNBA team, the Washington Mystics, has such a disproportionate amount of lesbians attending their games,
yeah,
they no longer have a kiss cam.
Oh, my goodness.
And they actually acknowledge it. This is a quote from the Mystics managing partner, Sheila Johnson. Quote, we get a lot of kids here. We just don't find it to be appropriate. And their point guard, Lindsay Harding, this is an unbelievable quote, said, quote, we wouldn't broadcast on our Jumbotron about abortion issues because of the religious and political conflicts it would cause. It's similar.
What?
Wow.
The representation,
so lesbians kissing that are just like abortions.
It's apparently it's a similar sensitive subject. We don't want to put anything out there to turn down certain fans.
Right.
And then the real kicker, just to increase the anger quotient, was from the Human Rights Campaign, and the HRC Vice President Kathy Nelson said, quote, Sheila and the Mystics have been nothing but supportive in our mind, showing up at all our dinner events, even bringing the whole team once, so we support them. How about the kiss cam? Is it really that threatening? Is the representation of really a peck at a WNBA game that threatening to mainstream America?
That is pretty shocking. I mean, this is all news. I must tell you that I'm sorry to say that I don't give a flying fatootie about sports, so I just don't keep up on these things. But that is disturbing, isn't it?
Well, I was listening to you on Stephen Colbert, and I was listening to your great interview on NPR, and folks must check that out over on your website if they have not heard it already. And I actually know some folks have, because people were very excited you were coming on the show.
Oh, that's neat.
Very excited. I loved hearing about just kind of the representations of women in mainstream media, and there's almost this assumption that, well, gosh, in the LGBT culture, it's a whole different thing. We're so equal opportunity, but we're not at all, are we?
Well, I mean, I guess, you know, it depends what the context is, right? I mean, I think that, like, you know, if you have cable television and you, I don't even know if it's only cable, and you watch after 11 p.m., you can see all the girls kissing you want because it's like every single
right.
thing between the show is a Girls Gone Wild ad, and it's just girls kissing, girls kissing, girls kissing. I guess when it's in an NBA game, it's people find it more unsettling. I don't know why. I mean, I don't understand this idea, I must say, that children are going to be traumatized by a flash of homosexuality as if they even sort of can identify what's going on, you know?
Well, I almost think if it was two cheerleaders kissing, they would show it. I felt like there was some sort of subtext here, well, we don't know what these lesbians are going to look like.
Right.
Right.
So,
I hope it's okay to tell this story because it's a little off point, but I just think it's the cutest thing in the world.
Go for it.
Is it PG-13?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Then
we're
probably
all for
fine.
It.
And you're not going to call out anyone and get us sued, right?
No. This is like one for the tots. It's
all right.
Love
it. It's that, so a couple of years ago, my spouse and I had this wedding, this big gig party, and it was great. It was just a blast. And it was in my dad's house in Virginia, and it was just a party. It had nothing to do with anything. So anyway, so all our friends came, and then not that long ago, I can't think of when it was. I guess it was a year ago before it became illegal again. We were in California
right.
staying with some friends' bars, and we were going to go and actually get, you know, like married at City Hall in San Francisco. So our friend's kid, Mariah, who's five, she said, what are you guys dressed up for? And we said, we're going to get married. And she said, you're getting married? And we said, yeah. And she said, again? I thought it was so cute.
That is cute. Did you do a New York party as well?
No, enough is enough. I'm absolutely mortified at how many times we've gotten married. It's got to stop. It's all we do.
But if New York legalizes it, will you go
no,
and have...
No, it's enough. I'm never getting married again. It's so stupid. We have to stop. It's ridiculous.
How many times total at this point?
Just twice.
Okay.
Just once with our big, you know, giant... party.
Right.
Like, believe me, we drew sufficient attention to ourselves. Like, it's enough. And then we went to San Francisco to get the thing, and then, you know, it's like you're there staying with your friends, and oh, well, so do you want to come and be the witness? And then somebody else gets jealous, and the next thing you know, you have a couple friends, and then once again, you're drawing attention to yourself to this thing. I mean, it has to stop. It's just preposterous.
So what I hear you saying is you're coming up in September to Vermont to do yet another wedding.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I would die.
We're going to be there. Andrew and I have got to do it. Well, we have to do it again. So
isn't that cute that little kid, this five-year-old, she wasn't saying, like, oh, this is hard to understand, two women getting married. She was saying, why do you keep doing it?
Right.
I love that.
When is it going to take at this
What's
point?
What's the big deal?
Yeah.
So those were a couple stories that were in the news. And then gay.com I go back and forth about, because they intersperse. If you go to gay.com news, they intersperse. And they're not going to sue us, Becca, so don't worry about it. They intersperse news stories with just these really fluffy editorials that I don't really understand. And unless you've written one, Ariel, in which case they're fantastic. And I love them, and they're really insightful. So they had this whole op-ed last week, which we didn't get to talk about what is the title of the article is, "What Makes a Lesbian Butch?"
Okay.
And it's this whole article that, I mean, article is a bit of a stretch.
Well, now this is a topic I'm actually obsessed with.
I know.
This is one thing we need to pause and say. The opinions of this show and this
so
show's host
that,
and this show's guests do not necessarily reflect those of WVEW, its partners, its
sponsors, or anybody
else.
So moving on from that, so the whole op-ed is about what is butch by today's definition. Is butch defined by how you look, how you act, or a combination of both? Taking it a step further, do we even need to use terms like butch and femme these days?
Uh-huh.
Do we?
All I know, all I can tell you on this subject is that I am cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. I love butches. I just do. I am married to one. I am obsessed with them. I just think it is the best thing in the world to be a butch. So, I mean, I don't really care if, like, what, whether it's, I don't care. All I can say is, if it's your thing, you know, if that's what you're attracted to and it is what I'm attracted to, you know it when you see it.
You know it when you see it.
You know, that's all there is to it.
Now, would you classify yourself as femme?
I would.
Look at that.
I would indeed. Although, you know, I mean, I don't. It's not, like, a big deal to me.
Right.
I mean, it's, like, that aspect of things.
See, so
you know, I don't. It's not. That to me is not a big.
Becca, you want to weigh in on butch and femme?
Would you say you're femme? Yeah, I would say so, but I don't. It's not something I think about a lot.
It's not on your card.
It's not on my card. No.
No. All right, Becca. Butch and femme important to you?
Important to me? No, not particularly. I think that it's kind of fun to play with, but you know, like the dichotomy. But I wouldn't identify as either one.
You wouldn't identify as either one?
No.
Okay. I think I'm more femme. It's just, I just want to put that out there. That's a shout out to my parents. Hi, Mom and Dad.
I mean, I understand why some people think it's, you know, tedious or whatever, you know.
Now, do you,
I just don't find either term particularly accurate for myself, so.
Now, do you go, Ariel, on YouTube and see people's both ravings and in support of and rants just with you in the title? Is this just something that I do in my spare time?
I have never done that.
You must. Okay,
no,
don't do it.
Not. I will not do that.
It's just fascinating.
Setting. I don't want to know.
Well, but you, I think one of the cool things that either if they're either supporting you or they're ranting against you, or we had to read this book for our women in culture class and it was fantastic, or we had to read this book in our women in culture class and I have so much to say about it, you very much arouse emotions.
I know, isn't that funny?
How cool is that?
Funny, it's weird.
Do you do that in your everyday life?
Not well.
Do you ever comment back anonymously?
No.
Oh, come on.
You totally do, don't you?
On blogs and things?
Yeah. Oh.
No.
Oh,
God,
I,
no.
All right.
Ken
no.
totally does.
I
he
do
has
it.
A whole set of
because
false names.
I don't think, because the fact of the matter is, honestly, honest to God, all kidding aside, I don't think it's productive
right.
for a writer to do that.
Right.
I think that if you're serious about this, and I am, I mean, then you write as well as you possibly can. And that's your project. And it's exciting if people care what you're writing. And God knows it feels good if they like it. And it's a bummer if they don't. But I can't really get involved
right.
in like a thing about it, because I'm not an entertainer. You know, I mean, I'm not in showbiz.
Right.
You know, so.
But isn't that what the internet's about?
It's about entertainment.
It is. I mean, I love the internet. But I just, in terms of it being like getting into some kind of ongoing, you know,
don't do it.
Like emotional thing with people. I mean, it's just not for me. It's just not how it doesn't help me work. It doesn't help me think things through better.
You could lose hours doing it. Not that, you know,
well,
I did today.
Yeah.
Not that I watched all of these YouTube. And I have to say the word that arouses emotion more than any other word would be feminist. People just go nuts over that word. Either it's my badge and this is who I am, or saying, gosh, I can't stand that word anymore. It doesn't mean anything. Over on, there's a website called The Frisky that I was checking out today. It was called The Frisky, and it's not a porn site. It's called The Frisky, and it's a website created by women for women. And there was a list that they had on there. I think this was yesterday, the day before. And the list was called 15 Things That Are Bad for Men. And number 15 was stupid. This is a website by women for women, and me. Number 15 was stupid feminism. And by that we mean A, so-called feminists who make men feel guilty for enjoying their masculinity and for wanting to be chivalrous and gentlemanly, and B, male feminists who think that their Now t-shirts make them exempt from paying on a first date. I thought that was really kind of an interesting tack on feminism. What is it about the word feminist that gets people so riled up?
Well, I mean, I think that, I mean, you see how poisonous for Obama it's been in the last, it is, 10 days, getting involved in this Skip Gates controversy. I mean, I think that any time people, you know, sort of draw attention to inequality, you know, you're making yourself open to being a target of ridicule. I mean, because it's just, it's somehow, it's like a part of our culture at this point. It's just, you know, like the worst thing you could ever do is whine about inequality. I mean, we're so on the lookout for self-proclaimed victims. I mean, but let's see, why specifically feminism more so than these other things? I mean, I also think that in fairness to that website, I mean, I think there is a lot of annoying stuff talked about in the name of feminism.
Absolutely.
That makes people then resistant to talk about the interesting stuff. I mean, that is real. That does, there is that.
What should people be reading these days? Who should they be looking to if they want to learn more about these representations of women in the media? Certainly they have to go and pick up your book. If they haven't already, I don't really understand.
Well, that's nice.
I mean, come on. But who are the leaders right now? Who should we be listening to?
Well, you know something? I love to read Natalie Anjé in the New York Times about female biology. I think she's fascinating and just a beautiful writer. I love the way she talks about... I mean, I love the way she writes about feminism, but also the way she writes about biology, and those two things are hardly mutually, you know, exclusive.
No, definitely not.
I love the way my colleague Judith Thurman writes about a lot of women's issues in The New Yorker. She has a book called Cleopatra's Nose that's about women and desire, and it's just fascinating. I mean, I tell you what, I just did this profile of Nora Ephron, and it was so much fun reading her essays that they're old, that are, you know, that are now 30 and some more than 30 years old on women's issues. I mean, she was just a fabulously funny as well as insightful voice on women's issues at the beginning of the liberation movement.
Did you get to see the new movie as part of this?
I certainly did. I've seen it three times.
Oh, come on. Is it good?
I have indeed.
And we should go see it, right?
Well, I tell you what, I think that it's a great movie. I think that it's about two things. Half, and I said this in the article. It's half of it is about Julie Child, and it's Julie Child played by Meryl Streep, and
right.
You're in Paris with you know Julie Child played by Meryl Streep, and it's absolutely transcendent. The other half of the movie is about this food blogger Julie Powell, and you know that half the movie, when you're seeing the Julie Powell stuff, it means you're not seeing the Julia Child stuff.
Right.
And you miss Julia Child. You miss Meryl Streep as Julia Child when she's not on the screen.
I was reading all about the food styling, and I think I was reading an article in the Times. Unbelievable.
You just have to eat before you go? Is that the key to this?
I think it's a good idea to eat before you go. And I also
or is there just a beeline for the nearest restaurants at the end?
You will definitely leave that movie hungry. I think speaking of things to read about women, a book I read to do that article was Julia Child's memoir, My Life in France. And that is just a fantastic
I haven't
read
that.
It's just divine.
Oh, we're going to have to check
it's
that out.
Such a pleasure.
Definitely.
It's such a pleasure. And Julia Child was, you know, I mean, she is a very worthy feminist icon.
Oh, my
gosh, she just accomplished so much and had such a life of adventure and was so sensual and
and very tall.
Very tall.
Very
you know
tall.
What scares
very...
me about that random comment you just made? I was about to make the same complete
well, no,
non sequitur.
Well, that, well, that's certainly, and I was reading, and you wrote about this as well, did you not? Just that about height played into it, that being a woman of that height was an additional challenge.
Well, she really, I mean, you get the sense from her, right, from her letters and from her memoir, and certainly I know this is Nora Ephron's opinion, that Julia Child was sort of imagining she was going to be this spinster giantess. And then she met this, you know, man, Paul Child, when she was abroad and working for the embassy. And they just had a great romance, and they had so much sex.
Yeah.
I mean, you could tell from these letters they wrote to their friends. I mean, they just like, oh, they just would shag all the time. So that's sort of fantastic to hear about, too, these middle-aged people, and one is a giant, and they just love each other, and they shag all the time.
It's inspirational.
I think so.
It's inspirational. All right, this leads us to, of course, our favorite part of the show, in which we ask our guest, Ms. Levy, we ask you to analyze yourself based on the song selections that you have provided for our listening audience this evening.
Oh, my God.
Psychoanalyze, yep.
Yes, so we would like to know what, and we won't make you do all of them, okay. Although this is a great selection of songs that you sent over.
Oh, my God.
And,
okay.
Becca, four songs. I did not have any of them on my iPod.
None
so
of them.
So I have four.
Is that true?
I
did not have any
the Rufus
of them.
Song in the past. Though.
No, we've played other Rufus
songs. I
think
Rufus that was one
songs.
Of our first shows.
I think so.
And I
certainly. Surely you had some of these songs on your iPod.
Did you?
I did.
See,
yeah.
Becca's, right. Yeah, she's much better at this than I am. All right, so let's
yeah,
start out.
Right.
What does Rufus Wainwright's Oh, What a World say about Ariel Levy?
I just love, I mean, first of all, I love his music in general. And, but I love the refrain of why am I always on a plane or a fast train. I mean, just that feeling of zooming around, and the music makes you feel like it's an adventure, but you're also kind of like running yourself ragged. But, and also, and that line about how, you know, what a world my parents gave me. I mean, the sense that everything is so different and buggered since. So, I mean, in some ways not, but
yeah.
Just in other ways, yes.
Okay.
I think that stuff I think about a lot, the sort of what has changed between my parents' generation and mine. I'm sort of, that's another obsession of mine.
That was a good one.
It was.
Oh,
that was
a
good, she
right.
Passes.
Okay, we'll pause. Moving on to Lucinda Williams, who I find that way too many people don't own Lucinda Williams' music.
They're robbing themselves.
They are. Something about what happens when we talk. What does that say about you?
God, I love that song so much. I love her so much. I mean, I just think that song is just such a powerful expression of what it's like to fall in love and just to feel like you just can't, you just don't want to stop the conversation with someone. And I must say that I don't know if this was one of the songs I sent, but when Amy and I got together, we met on the Blackout 6 years ago in New York City in the summer.
I remember
and then
that Blackout.
And I was in New York. And part of my seduction strategy was I kept sending her songs, you know, whatever you, what do you call it when you send a MP3?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if I sent this one, but I should have. I mean, because I just, that's the way you feel when you first meet someone, I think, and you fall in love. You just don't want to stop the conversation.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Oh, gosh. Nice. That Blackout was my first day working at Sarah Lawrence.
Oh, is that true?
Day working at Sarah Lawrence College
in
Bronxville, and that Blackout went all the way up there. So
that was a significant blackout for both of us.
That was a big day. It was a big day.
Yeah.
And then finally, the song that will play you out in just a few minutes, Joni Mitchell. And God, there's such a great selection of Joni Mitchell to choose from. I'm fascinated that this is the one you chose. In France, They Kiss on Main Street.
Oh, God. I mean, it's just so jubilant. I just think that, I mean, this is part of what I love about that Julia Child book, too, is that song is so much about that fabulous excitement of travel. And I mean, to me, you know, obviously in both those situations about France, but I felt that way all over the world, where you're just on fire because you're, everything's new and it's so stimulating. And you know, and I just love the line where Joni says in that song, like, do you want to dance? I'd love to dance. I mean, I'm obsessed with Joni Mitchell. The only person I've ever met who's more obsessed with Joni Mitchell than I am is John Kelly, who's this, you know, performance artist, who's, the thing he's most famous for is doing these concerts as Joni. And
wow.
He gives me a run for my money, but I'm just obsessed with Joni Mitchell.
We love Joni Mitchell.
Nice.
Well, now, where should...
Talk about a feminist icon, my
oh,
God.
Oh, gosh,
yeah.
She is the queen.
I think when I when I graduated NYU, my hall manager in the dorm that I lived in gave me the collected works of Joni Mitchell, the book of just a book of Joni Mitchell lyrics and poetry. And it was just, it changed the way I listened to music. It changed the way I looked at a lot of things in the world. So folks should,
the thing about Joni, I mean, she's just operating on every cylinder. It's like, you could read it like you did, you know, where it's just the words. But to me, the music, the sounds in that song, in France, like Kiss on Main Street, they're just so jubilant and so stimulated, which is what I associate with the best of travel, you know.
Love her. Nice. Love her. Now, what are you, I have to tell you, I'm going to ask you what you're working on and where people should go. On every Wednesday night as I'm driving over to the show, it's kind of the time when I call my parents. And I try, my goal every week is to try to get my dad excited for whatever show we're doing. So he always asked, he said, oh, who's the guest?
And he was fact-checking for us.
Well, he was fact-checking. This is the funniest thing. he never really, he's like, oh, okay, whatever. Every single week, you know, we have this guy argued before the Supreme Court, and this person is on TV all the time, and blah, blah, blah. So he said, so who's on tonight? And it's our little game. And I said, oh, well, it's Ariel Levy. And he said, well, who's that? And I said, well, Dad, she writes for The New Yorker. He said, oh, my God. I said, oh, and I'm thinking to myself, all right, we got it. We're good. This is good.
We finally broke into the dad market.
Well, no, this is the funniest thing. He said, and so I was really excited, and I'm thinking, all right, so I've piqued his interest. That's a really good thing. And he said, and he called my mom. He's like, get on the phone. And my mom got on the phone. I'm like, well, this is good. And he's got someone from The New Yorker. And I said, oh, great. So you're excited? He said, of course we're excited. The editor-in-chief of The New Yorker was bar mitzvahed in our temple. And I'm like, oh, okay. So... that's apparently the big
thing. You want to know what my dad said when I told him I got him a job at The New Yorker?
What's that?
He said, well, nowhere to go but down.
Nice.
Oh.
So, yes, and my dad's like, well, I see the editor-in-chief's mother all the time. She's a part of our congregation. This is so exciting. I said, you know,
she
Dad.
Is? Mrs. Remnick is?
Mrs. Remnick, part of our congregation. I said, Dad, I don't think I'm going to be able to... well, I told my dad, I don't think I'm going to be able to fit this into the show, but...
but look, he managed to.
Somehow managed.
I'm going to tell David Remnick that tomorrow.
Well, and then my dad called 2 minutes before we got on the air and said, no, she's not... she doesn't write for The New Yorker. She writes for New York Magazine. I said, oh, well, Dad, she used to write for New York Magazine. She writes for The New Yorker. I don't think you're right. I said, all right, well, we'll find out, Dad. But I know that I'm right. So where should people go to read everything that's going on with you? What's coming up next?
Well, next week in The New Yorker, I have a piece about John Kelly, who I was just talking about.
Oh, great.
Fabulous performance artist. And he would be a good guest on your show. He's so gay.
We'll take him.
And he's just a fascinating guy. I really, really like him. And he's spent his whole career, you know, the thing he sort of has this cult fame for is doing these shows as Joni, and he's a fabulous contralto voice, and he sings the songs, they're incredible, and it's great. But he's you know, it's like a 30-year career of doing performance art, and he's done, you know, dance as Egon Schiele, and he's painted himself as Caravaggio's Medusa, and he just
is
a fascinating sort of multi-talented, you know, career doing, sort of embodying other artists.
Yeah.
It's very interesting.
All right, we're sending him an email. We're going to get him on the show.
So that's, I have a piece in The New Yorker next week about that.
Fantastic.
About him.
And give out the website, because everyone's got to go to your website.
www.newyorker.com, and just spell out New Yorker. And then my website is ariellevy.net, which is my name spelled out, .net.
Awesome. Awesome. And we love your website. It has just this
It's so classy.
It's very classy.
Oh, thanks, you guys.
We love your website. We love that you got...
It's not very high-tech, is it?
It's
good.
It's like the perfect accessibility. It's the perfect accessibility. And we love that you got fired from Planned Parenthood.
I certainly did.
I worked for them, too, briefly.
Did you get fired, Becca?
I did not get fired.
Okay.
I went away.
So you were better at it.
No, I just had less responsibility.
My only responsibility, I was supposed to type, and they said, you're too slow, you're fired. And the New York Magazine hired me as a typist.
Oh, I had to alphabetize microfiche and get coffee past the protesters. They always came out with the funniest things. They'd be like, you're too pretty to work at. What? You're too young and pretty to work for this bad place.
Yeah. You're like, I'm just getting the coffee.
Well, I mean, I think, you know.
Because obviously, evil people would be ugly.
Yes. That's a known fact.
It's a known fact. Anyway, sorry.
The evil grizzles you.
Right.
Well, we love your writing. We love we love what you, just the topics that you give voice to, because you find these topics that I can't imagine if someone said them to me. I'm like, oh, well, that's probably not something I'm going to read about. And then I read it and I'm like, oh, I care about this. So you really find these topics that just hit this piece of culture that nobody else is hitting. And they're such a pleasure to read. And you have such...
Wow, thanks.
Nay, anytime. You have a great voice. You have a great voice.
I have to tell you, I will say the thing I'm most proud of in my career is that I convinced the aforementioned David Remnick to let me write a very long piece about S&M lesbian separatists in The New Yorker. Nice. And I tell you what, it was not hard to convince him either. He was game.
That's awesome.
But I was stoked. I was stoked that, you know, there was all this stuff about these girls spanking each other in The New Yorker magazine. I thought that was really quite something.
Oh, it is quite something. Well, you know, those of us who were bar mitzvahed at Temple Emmanuel in Wycliffe Lake, New Jersey, I mean, come on. We tend to stick together.
I'm definitely going
to
tell him about this.
We tend to be more sanctioning than other folks. It's just,
Becca,
it's
did you have a bar mitzvah?
I did not. I'm not Jewish.
Well, so then no
way. But I mean, I guess I could at some point.
No, you could not.
I could someday. You never
you
know.
Could convert.
There was this whole story a couple years ago about this group of retired women who all decided to get bat mitzvahs because they weren't allowed to when they were 13.
Oh, really? Oh, well, so.
And now they could.
I stand corrected. I insisted on having a bat mitzvah when I was, I think when I was 10 or something.
Really?
My parents were so bummed out. They were like, you are so square. Why are you doing this to us?
Did you have a theme?
I was doing it, and you better get on board.
Did you have a theme?
No.
No. There was no theme to the party?
Well, Judaism was sort of the theme, and my parents were just appalled.
Who does that? My theme was tennis.
What?
Mine was a tennis theme. Who does Judaism as a theme?
Oh, my God, that's so poignant.
It was really insightful. Yes, and my colors, I kid you not.
Oh, God.
Were maroon and silver.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That sounds garish.
It was pretty... did you hear the part where the theme was tennis?
Right.
Mine was
peach and green.
Oh, nice.
Talk about... No, it was horrible. It was sort of a WASP color scheme, right?
Aria Levy, it is just an absolute, absolute joy to have you on the show. You've made many, many people happy. We got a ton of emails saying, oh my God, that's great. And so we are thrilled to have you on. Folks need to go check out your website. They need to go pick up your book. It's a great, great read. Isn't it cool that it's taught in all of these classes, in college classes all across the country?
I love that. And I go into the classes a lot and talk to people. That's fun. That's really nice.
That's fantastic.
When are you making a stop in Vermont?
Yeah, come on up. Marlboro College, you will come into...
I would like to. God, I love Vermont. It's so pretty.
Oh, good.
Come on.
You're doing great work. We would love to have you back. Keep on writing.
Absolutely.
Everyone, check out her articles. Check out her website. It's an absolute joy to have you on.
Thanks, guys. Have me back. I'd love to talk to you again.
All the best.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Downtown, my darling dime store thief. In the war of independence, rock and roll rang sweet as victory. Under neon signs, a girl was in blue, and a woman was fading in a suburb.
Circumstance, and we were rolling, rolling, rock and rolling. Downtown, the dance halls and cafes feel so wild you could break somebody's heart just doing the latest dance craze. Gail and Louise in those push-up bras. Under bridges, kissing in cars, kissing in cafes. And they were walking down Main Street, kisses like bright flags hung on holidays. In France they kiss on Main Street, amour, mama, not cheap display. And we were rolling, rolling, rock and roll.
That was the incomparable Joni Mitchell singing In France They Kiss on Main Street, as requested by tonight's just brilliant guest, Ariel Levy. Please go check out her stuff. She's got a voice. We like people with a voice. I could end on a very depressing note, but I should probably not do that, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so then I won't do that.
No more depressing.
If I were to end on a depressing note, I might say that there is a trans mental health crisis in Massachusetts. 31% of transgender residents of Massachusetts have considered suicide in the past year, compared with 2% of the state's non-trans heterosexual population, according to a new report issued by the Massachusetts Department of Health, Public Health, in conjunction with Mass Equality. We are not yet at the point, folks, where we are paying nearly enough attention to the trans community and the particular struggles that they encounter on a daily basis. And if this call, if this report is not a call to action, we have absolutely no idea what is. So get out there and educate yourself. Educate yourself right now. That's
pretty
much it.
And then educate others.
And then educate others. Don't just keep it with yourself. You got to educate other people.
That's right.
Hey, everybody. You should go to our website at thisshowissogay.com. You should also please support our event and buy tickets to Notes for Life, which is on October 10th, 2009. And you can buy tickets by going to notesforlife.net. Not .com. Somebody already owns notesforlife.com, and it ain't us. So go to notesforlife.net.
But I don't think it's porn either, so it's safe.
It's a good thing. It's a good thing. It's not a porn event. And at the event, Kate Pizakis, Broadway star Kate Pizakis, is singing. R&B funk goddess Samira Evans is going to be singing with her Handsome Devils. And also Winter Pills, who are just an amazing indie folk rock band coming out of Northampton, are coming up. So,
and it's a super good cause.
It's a super, super good cause. So that's pretty much it for us, folks. Get out there. Do amazing things. Tell a friend about us. Tell a friend about yourself. Educate yourself on a subject. Get out there and remember, why be gay when you can be so gay.
Special friend, but you don't see.